Christopher Lydon. This is a connection. The war for talent is what the McKinsey consultants are calling the business world's new challenge. As demand for smart, hardworking, energetic people is rising in this economy, the supply is shrinking. But talent, it turns out, is what takes the company to the top. It's more important than capital or strategy or R&D. Silicon Valley companies were among the first to put a premium on vision and creativity. But then the talent-first trend has spread to airlines, steel companies, banks, virtually every place. So, how do you recruit the right people? One way, of course, is to seduce them away from your competitors by offering better perks and benefits. Spas, gyms, catered lunches, all the latte you can drink in a day. But there's also the new fashion job interview. At one internet company in Boston, job candidates are handed a box of Legos and told to build whatever they want in 5 minutes. One recent college graduate passed the test by throwing together an aerated cognac snifter and then describing its functional and aesthetic value. Companies are using brain teasers, puzzles, mathematical equations, role-playing to separate the wheat from the chaff. We're talking about new ways to find talent this hour. Connection listeners, what is the best way to interview somebody? How did you con your way onto your job? 1-800-423-8255 makes the war for talent connection. With us in the studio are the highly talented Bill Taylor and Alan Weber, founders and editors of the booming Fast Company magazine, the magazine of young enterprise. Give them a call at 1-800-423-8255. Alan Weber, how do you interview talent? Might be talent.
We make them come on the equivalent of the Fast Company talk show. Now, we have a very organic system at our magazine, and that is you got to deal with Bill and me. And if you can impress us with your character, your smarts, your energy, not just clips. Don't show us what you've done. Tell us who you are and what you bring to the table as a person who can add to the mix, to the chemistry of the place.
Who? Give us a concrete instance. Who's passed that test and how?
Well, I'll talk about somebody we're looking at right now. There's a young woman who's in New York, and she's been persistent in talking to Bill and me both over a period of time, indicating she's really serious and energetic and wants to join the team. She was willing to come to Boston on a plane just on her own and sit down and meet with us, make the rounds of the rest of the team at the magazine. And we ask questions about not so much what have you written or what have you edited, but who are the interesting people you've met lately? What other publications do you read and what do you think about them? What's catching your eye in the world of work? What are you thinking about that you think would be an appropriate kind of piece for our magazine to see if we're all on the same page, on the same wavelength, if there's a meeting of taste. And
it sounds very traditional, if I may say.
Well, we're not that much into, build me a cognac snifter. But I do think conversation is a really good way to test how people hold up in an office of ideas.
Bill Taylor, what's the best answer you've ever gotten in a job interview?
This is a tough interview in and of itself. The best answer I've ever gotten in a job, I tell you, I want to be a great storyteller. Let me go back to what you're talking about with Alan. The key here for us, it's not so much what gimmick do you use. Do you like Lego blocks or cognac snifters? It's to understand that if you are, as a company, playing the game differently, we certainly think we are, that we have figured out a different way to be a magazine. The important question to ask people who are coming to see you is not what do you know, but do you get how we play the game, and are you comfortable playing it this way? And so these people may be the most credentialed people in the world, the smartest people in the world by the more traditional metrics, but if they don't get the ideas and the sensibilities and the culture that makes your organization tick, they're not ultimately going to be high-valued members of the teams. And that is what these assorted gimmicks are all trying to do. Can I just tell you about one that another
Sure.
company uses that I think is way beyond Legos bucks? One of the best companies I know, Southwest Airlines. If you fly on Southwest Airlines, you understand from the day one it's a different kind of airline. And why it's different, they fly on the same planes. They usually fly to crummier airports. The reason it's different is the people who work there. And the reason they have the best people is they think so hard about what kind of people do we let in and how do we do it. If you want to be a flight attendant at Southwest, here's what the process is like. First of all, they had about 5,000 openings last year, got 60,000 applications. So they need a high volume way to screen
people. To sell tickets and move bags.
And get on the plane and you know, serve the Coca-Cola and so on. Flight attendants are primarily there for your safety. The first thing they ask you is, do you have previous airline experience? And the hands go up, Delta, United. At Southwest, that is a very bad answer. They literally hold industry experience against you because they feel like we do things so differently here. We don't want to be in the business of deprogramming you before we teach you how we do things. Second thing is, you don't fill out a traditional application, what schools you go to and so on. You fill out what they call a personal coat of arms. It's a one-page sheet of paper, and it's got questions like, one time my sense of humor helped me was, one time I reached my peak performance was, my motto of life is. Very crude, I'll admit, but it's basically getting at the question of not what do you know, but what makes you tick. And that is really the critical question. What makes you tick? Now it's time for your interview. You do not have one-on-one job interviews at Southwest. What happens is they call you in. They don't explain what's going to happen. They call you in groups of 12. They put you in a room behind a one-way mirror. And you're sitting there for 5 or 10 minutes, you're feeling a little uncomfortable, you don't know what's going to happen. Suddenly a voice comes booming in over the loudspeaker and it says, we've got good news and bad news. Bad news is the world is 10 minutes away from nuclear annihilation. Good news is you people are in the fallout shelter. And oh, by the way, we've got another 15 people outside. We've got the world's greatest biologist. We've got the world's burliest construction worker. We've got the world's most fertile couple. Anything you might need to rebuild society after the apocalypse. There's only room for 6 of these folks in here. Your job as a group is to reach consensus in 10 minutes on which 6 of the 15 we let in. And oh, by the way, will be watching. And on the other side of the mirror are folks from the Southwest People Department. They want, now, there's not a right, it's not like anybody who wants the biologist is hired, anybody who wants the sexy couple isn't. It's all about who's good at leading the group to consensus, who cracks under the pressure. If someone cracks, who's good at getting the organization back? What it's about, quite simply, is trying to simulate how crappy it feels to be a flight attendant in an airplane under lots of pressure, lots of stress, lots of surly people, and find out how you are going to behave. And Southwest will tell you, anybody can be charming one-on-one for a half an hour in an interview. You learn more about all these people in this 10 minutes than you would learn in hour-long. And it sounds crazy. It's worked great for them.
I'm dying to try it. I'm sure you can file the answer under the heading of sort of how my sense of humor helped me out, too.
Exactly right. And you'll understand, humor is a big part of the Southwest culture. The way they make their announcements, the way the folks act and dress, it's all part of the culture there.
You remind me of a different sort of interview process with a woman being recruited for a huge, famous publishing company in Boston. Of course, they expected to ask her what she had done at a university press in the heart of the country. She came prepared not just with that, but with a review of everything the Boston publisher had done in the last 5 years. And she told them what they had done, right and wrong. She reviewed them up one side and down the other, and she knew more about their operation than they did.
Right.
Had you ever interviewed anybody at Fast Company who said, okay, that's what I can do. Let me talk about what you're doing. I get your message, and you're off 4 degrees.
Yeah, well, the good news about a lot of the folks we talk to is they're people with terrific opinions and strong will people, so we get that a lot. But can I use that as an opportunity to make a turn the tables a bit? What I hope listeners will understand is this is not just about how companies interview them. The reality today is in a world in Boston and Seattle and Austin, wherever, where we have effectively 0% unemployment for knowledge workers, if you will, people are in better positions than ever to interview the companies they're thinking about working for. I mean, who's got the power in this relationship today? It's not the company interviewing you. It's you. If you're a smart person and you declare on Monday, I'm on the open market, you know, I'm willing to accept
free agent,
you're going to have 5 companies after you within a couple of weeks. And so what you have to figure out is this the kind of company I want to be at? And it takes just as many smart techniques for individuals to interview companies as it does smart techniques for companies to interview individuals. And if folks want to talk about that, we can do that as well.
Give them some advice.
Well, I think
how do you interview a company?
You raised a very good one right off the bat, Chris, and that is come totally prepared. It is so much easier today than ever before to get the lowdown on the inside of the company. Go to their website. Don't, if it's a magazine, don't just check out the print product. Check out the website. Get a feeling for how they present themselves through their website. They companies typically are not as good at covering up who they are, what their character is like, what their culture is like on the website as they may be in their formal business proposition. So do the digging on the web. If you can find some employees who will talk to you or former employees who will talk to you, find out what it's really like to work there as opposed to the story that you may get when you go to the company for a live interview. And another point that comes out is when you do go to the live interview, if the company is asking you to do gimmicky things, that's fine, but also read the culture through what the company looks like. We're living in a day and an age where design tells a lot. You go to a company and they tell you in the interview or in the conversation, we're really into teamwork. We believe that teamwork is an integral part of how we do business here. You look around the building, there's no team spaces, it's all cubicles, it's very formal. It looks like a Phoenician boat with the slaves all facing one direction. They may say they're about teamwork. The layout, the design, the look and feel of the place puts the lie to it. So you've got to be decoding what the place really feels like. And I think Bill's basically got it nailed when he says companies, whether you use a gimmick or you just use a straight ahead combination or conversation, the companies that are good at attracting talent know what they're looking for. They're confident of themselves. They understand what they're about. They know what makes them different. The same is true of the talent. Well, but I don't think it's a gimmick if it's really an expression of who you are as a company.
I want to know what you would have done with the Legos, Alan Weber. And what did the guy...
I don't think that's suitable for a family radio show, Chris.
what did the cognac snifter made out of Legos tell anybody?
I suspect that it demonstrated that this guy had a sense of the finer things in life. He was creative, and he worked well under pressure.
And it may be, by the way, that the cognac sniffer, the Legos, is not the point. We know of a company we think very highly, Rosenbluth Travel, the second biggest travel company in the country. And one thing they do is they figure out a way to get somebody in the car and drive around. And they drive around, and when you're driving around, they're asking you what's the biggest challenge you ever had in your life? And if you could do anything, what you'd be doing? And they're actually not listening to the word you say. They're actually watching, how do you drive? And are you a polite person? Do you put your blinker on? Do you cut people off? Because they're in a service business. They really care about the way you comport yourself with other people. And they feel like if they're engaging you in all this discussion, your real behavior is coming out in your driving. So they pay very careful attention to how you drive. It's kind of a goofy thing, but I think it works very, very well for them. And again, these are people who think through this stuff pretty carefully.
And it really makes the point. You're not sure what's the foreground and what's the background in the job interview. Is it your record of accomplishment? Well, not if you're in an industry or a company that's all about change. It may be your agility of mind, your willingness to be flexible, your willingness to walk away from your record of accomplishment. Another thing that Rosenbluth does that I think is goofy and gimmicky but really works, they're all about customer service. They make their talent play a game of volleyball. They look to see who passes. A lot of folks think, well, we're there for the killer spike. You want the big, front line that'll put the ball away. They want to see who passes in a volleyball game.
Since we're both 5'7", we're not big on the killer spike.
I like the idea of the volleyball game. I like the idea of the fact that they're watching your driving, not listening to your talk. It reminds me, when we were getting out of college, the CIA interviewed a lot of people, and all we knew was, somebody figured out that they weren't listening to what you said, The trick was to see, they took you to lunch, the trick was to see whether you put salt in the soup before you'd tasted it or not. That was a very bad time. Taste it and then salt it, perhaps.
Huh. I thought it was who had the poison-tipped umbrella, but that's...
Well, that was the next step.
But this principle you identified, though, is don't listen to what people say. Watch what they do. This is what company after company is tumbling to. And if you see, for example, another company you know about, this is not just high tech stuff, Nucor Steel, great steel company. They got to go out and build a lot of plants, and they tend to build them in kind of rural areas where there's not a workforce ready to go and staff the plant once it's built. So all the construction workers come in and build the plant and so on. And Nucor always has a couple of people on the construction site who have nothing to do with the building of the plant, and they just spend all the time watching the construction workers, because the construction workers don't know it, but their work building the plant is their month-long audition for, do you want to work here too? And so once the job is over, these people go, we've been watching you for the last month. We like what you're doing. We like the initiative. We like your work ethic. We want you to come and work here too. And in a world where so many decisions, critical decisions, have to get made on the front line where the quote-unquote boss is not even in the room, you really have to have great confidence about how are these people going to behave, what really makes them tick. And the way you do that is to watch what they actually do, not listen to them charming the socks off you in a one-hour interview.
And it works the other way, too, Chris. You got a lot of companies where if you are the talent, you're the free agent, you don't have to take a full-time job. You can get a project, test drive the company, see what it would be like to work there on a full-time basis. If the project is good, you like it, you like the people you're working with, you can then transition into a full-time job. But you can, in effect, do to the company what Nucor is doing with the construction workers, and that is give them a test drive, kick the tires a little bit, check it out. Don't jump. Stand a little bit on the sideline, put a toe in the water, and see what it feels like.
Connection listeners, we're test driving, kicking the tires of the new job interview. Beyond the resume, beyond the hello at lunch, where have you been? What's the best job interview test you've ever survived, or flunked for that matter? 1-800-423-8255 with Bill Taylor and Alan Weber, founding editors of Fast Company magazine. We're talking about job interviews for the new economy. 1-800-423-8255. Colleen Aylward joins us from Seattle. She's the president of a high-tech recruiting company, and she designs interviewing strategies for internet startups. Colleen, give us an overview of your best techniques.
Our best techniques are sort of a combination of what we bring and get from our clients, such as Amazon and Vizio and the high-tech Northwest out here. You hit a lot of them, guys, that we do out here, especially the driving around. We do have a client that likes to drive their candidates and say, I forgot my dry cleaning. Can you take me out there? And they do watch. Can they shift at the same time? Can they put their blinker on? Do they get frustrated? Other things that we see out here are the aggressive interview. When we go on site and create a recruiting war room where they have to hire 40 people in the next 2 months, for instance, you know, they're in a panic. And they want to know if people can deal with ambiguity. Even the senior level positions, we were talking to Hydrogen Struggles yesterday, and they are, you know, really asking our high-level candidates and questions to test their dealing with ambiguity. Tell me what kind of a situation at your current job, sir, really needs to be addressed right now, or things are going to happen in that company. It's really an ambiguous question, and if they sit there and say, well, tell me what you mean, do you mean in HR, or that's kind of a sign to you that they're not just picking up and being a leader and saying, well, let me tell you, in several areas, you know, that's a leadership thing. This confrontational thing we've all learned from Microsoft and their way of interviewing.
How does that work?
Well, they do it several ways. The one that's most out in the street is they'll interrupt a lot. When a person is talking, they'll go, yeah. Now, what I want to know is this, and see how they react to a very aggressive, confrontational person. If you can't hold your own at Microsoft, you won't even survive. Or they'll argue a point, knowing that the point that they're arguing is ridiculous, but they'll very seriously argue the point.
Now, Alan Weber, do you want to interrupt her just to prove you're a real man, a good prospect?
That's outrageous, Colleen!
it is true that Microsoft wrote the book on the obnoxious interview. The stories are legendary of the hotbox techniques.
And exactly.
Here's a difficult problem. We'll put it up on the board. Can you solve it under stress while we're watching you do it?
Right.
What are your programming skills? How many barbers are there in the state of Nebraska? Do the math right here in front of us right now.
Right.
The
here's
clock
the
ticking.
Right, make it into a house in 20 seconds, right?
And presumably that's supposed to demonstrate your ability to work under stress. Maybe it's a test of Microsoft's character, too. Who knows?
Well, I think it is. I mean, and the key is for people who are out there thinking about how might I change my interview style, don't mimic these things. That may make perfect sense, in a high-tech world in where the sort of combative spirit is alive and well. I've got a good pal named T.J. Rogers, runs a company called Cypress Semiconductor. Their technique, they call it the pack of wolves. And they put you in a room, and they give you your chip design. They give you kind of a physics problem, which, unbeknownst to you, is not, it is insoluble. You cannot, and they come, we need you to solve this in 20 minutes. And they have four or five people, and they descend on you like a pack of wolves. How could you go?
Last guy did it in
way?
10 minutes, yeah.
Exactly.
Matt Damon did it instantly.
And that's right. And then he killed him. mixing up our movies. But
you know, yesterday I had a high-level guy from Microsoft come in and interview another one of my clients, and this guy was so aggressive. He came and he followed me back into the recruiting war room, and he looked at the boards to see who his competition was, and he wouldn't get out of the room, and he's pummeling me for background on his competitors, and that's the way they grow them at Microsoft.
Right. Now, that's perfectly appropriate for Microsoft. It's totally inappropriate for Southwest, where it's all about gracious service, humor, humility, how can I help you? And you just, it does require, to do this well, it does require, if you are a leader, to understand what the hell kind of company are you building in the first place. And it really requires you to go back to first principles.
Thank you.
Colleen.
A lot of what we do is asking the client, this is your critical time to build your corporate culture. Do you want a clone of you? Do you want to broaden your base? Do you want all aggressive, little obnoxious people? Or, you know, we work with Jeff Bezos over at Amazon, and what he would hire is degrees. He firmly believed that an MIT and an Oxford degree could really be hired sight unseen because they had some sort of quality that he wanted. And he'd stick them in a customer support role, way low-level customer support getting on the phones. And if they didn't make it there, then he knew that they couldn't make it in the real world because that is, you know, like a head waiter.
Colleen, I wonder, you work for big companies. How would you advise a young candidate for a job, particularly if you wanted to tip off the fact that you're more important to them than they are to you, that you're in the driver's seat here?
You meaning the candidate?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was Alan that said it. The key to this is to look at their website and get all kinds of questions for the company and take control. If a person comes into an interview traditionally and says, hi, here's my resume, and, you know, what can I answer for you? Instead of saying, hey, I looked at your website, I've read up on you, and here's where I think your product could go. That's very key. That's very key. They're looking for people that have a brain. Because a lot of these startups in this high-tech world now are all about, gee, we have this great concept. Now I got to go out and get the kids in here that will take me to the next step. Especially the companies that are so consumer-based now. You've got to go out and look and see what the consumer wants. Like these companies that are, you know, online bill paying, for instance. Where's the world going to go when they get all that data, you know, never mind the legality of it in Big Brother, but what are we going to do with all this data once we get all the data from the cookies and now we know who buys what where? You know, you ask somebody on an interview, okay, so let's say we have all this data that we've gathered on who buys books and groceries here and who buys their energy from here. Now, what do you think we should do with that to make us the most revenue?
You know, Colleen, we hear the stories back here of the Boston-based high-tech companies that go out to places like Carnegie Mellon and sit down and start explaining what they can offer, and the kids interrupt them and say, very, very interesting what you can offer me. Let me tell you, I looked at your website. There's only one team I want to work on. There's one project leader who I really respect.
Exactly.
I'm willing to work 9 months, 12, 14 hours a day, but I'm a avid rock climber, and I need my 3 months off to rock climb. And by the way, before you tell me I'm arrogant, you need to know that three of your competitors have already offered me a job. Are you prepared to talk turkey?
And that's very right on. That's what happens 90% of the time.
What's the outcome of that interview? Who gets hired?
The outcome is, I think you make yourself you make it very clear that you are desirable. You make it very clear what the terms and conditions are that you're willing to work for. And it's either a marriage that works or it doesn't. But there's no more of this kind of, we are beholden to the company for the job.
I'm so grateful for the interview.
Yeah, please, please may I wear your lapel pin for 25 years.
And the company will be able to tell right away. What you guys were saying before is so right. They know what they want. It might not be in the description, but they know. You two at Fast Company, you know exactly the kind of person that you want in there. And you can tell by the way they, you know, one of the questions that we ask a lot is, tell me the best joke you've heard lately.
Hmm. We recruited our web guy over the web from Australia. He flew from Australia to Boston.
Is that far enough away for you, Alan?
It proved he cared. And he walked in the office with his earring, his porpoise earring in his ear and his hair down to his waist. It was the first time we'd ever met him. And we said, this is the guy. You're hired.
Right.
You're it.
You know, I'm getting to be older than any of my CEOs out here, and so I've had to hire some of these kids that live in Belltown and wear the baggy pants and the huge shoes, and they're pierced everywhere, you know. And I walk in with my menage a trois, right, and the client says, okay, well this will work. This will work.
Colleen, I want to know, I hope you'll stick with us through the break, but I want you to just tell us before the break, if you can, what's the best candidate response to a tough job interview that you observed? A confrontational interview, an interrupting interview, a Microsoft interview, or otherwise?
Well, those are all sort of the same, but the best reaction that a candidate had?
Yeah.
Oh, you can see it right away. They'll come out of the room all pumped and all fired. And, you know, if it's a guy, it's got a lot of testosterone going, and they're all pumped saying, okay, when do I start? When do I start?
None of you have said what money has to do with it, the salary being proffered or demanded.
I think in an odd way, with so much money floating around and so many options floating around, it becomes a less and less interesting thing to talk about. The theory is that bidding war is going to work itself out, and the interesting questions are all questions about values, behavior, fit, interests, career paths, and so on. If the way you get talent is to try to outbid people for talent, you're going to be fighting a losing battle, because there's always going to be someone down the road willing to give 10,000 more options or 20,000 more bonus. And there's another critical point is when I go as an editor and I interview companies, and should we write about you in Fast Company, the first question I ask is, why would smart people want to work here?
And good question. We're going to come back with a lot of answers after the break. We're talking about the new job interview for the new economy. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI. We're funded by the listeners of WBUR Boston and by the Graduate School of International Economics and Finance at Brandeis, offering an information session on all programs on February 3rd, 800-878-8866. And by Goldsmiths 3, creators of contemporary handcrafted jewelry and precious metals and rare gems. For the complete picture, goldsmiths3.com. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. We're talking about job interviews for the new economy. Our guest Bill Taylor says the first thing you ought to do in a job interview is turn it right back on the person who's hiring you and say, why would smart people want to work here? 1-800-423-8255 makes the job interview connection with Colleen Elwood, a specialist in the Seattle market, on the line from the West Coast. 1-800-423-8255. Donnell is on the line. Donnell, thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning, Chris. Donnell Tomasella, how are you?
Good.
I'm calling because I'm on the opposite side of that coin. I'm interviewing companies, taking my talents as a free agent in communications and public relations and as an Emerson College professor, intrigued by the dot-com phenomenon, and going out and interviewing non-traditional type of interviews, like I like to say in my Emerson College interpersonal communications class, take off the human resources face. Go out there and be yourself and ask some hard questions with the folks that are interviewing you for positions.
Right. Give us an idea of a tough question, Donnell.
Well, what I like to do, and it's worked thus far, in fact, I've had some great opportunities to interview with companies that have been in the globe recently and just waiting to hear back from a few of them, but who knows where that will go, and I'll keep on interviewing, is that these end up being somewhere between 2 and 3 hour lunches. My resume is hardly looked at, and we just talk about one another. One of the things I like to communicate is that I'm not going to sell my soul to the company, and I'm hearing this from my students, too, at Emerson, and that I have lived outside of the box as a free agent, and I'll go over in detail what I have to bring to the company. Now, about 2 years ago, high tech wasn't interested in a multifaceted free agent like myself, and now they are. I don't know what happened to turn that around, but the feedback that I've gotten is that when they've made the internal promotions, it didn't work. They're looking for fresh ideas.
Tell you why that worked.
Bill Taylor.
Yeah, the power, part of it, the reason it turned around is that the power equation turned around. And let me just take up on what Donnell was saying and offer a few more pieces of advice of if you want to interview the company. First thing is, as is true with everything on the web, there's solutions to all this. There are now a whole genre of web companies that are designed to fill you in on what really goes on inside companies, and that's their service. There's a service called thevault.com, vault.com. There's another one called wetfeet.com, how to get your feet wet before. And they are filled with all kinds of sort of insider stuff. It's kind of like the insider's guide to colleges of 20 years ago, and they're not a bad place to start. The other thing is, many companies, particularly high-tech companies, have lots of now online discussion groups among customers where they're talking about, here's my experience with this particular product. I've known many people who, when they're considering a job with a company, will send a message, hey, I'm considering working at Amazon.com. I'm considering working at Intel. Tell me as customers what you think's going on, what should I be wary of, what's exciting, and so on. Third thing not to be overlooked is your online alumni associations at your colleges. If you're a graduate of Princeton, as I am, and you're thinking about working at XYZ, the colleges are getting smarter and smarter about getting their people online in the community. You go and say, hey, any fellow Princetonians out there who worked at this company, people are eager to share what they know. In that sense, you're only kind of 2 degrees of separation away from any lots of good feedback. So there's a lot of stuff you can do over and above just grokking a particular company's website that gets you prepared to ask the tough questions you want to ask.
I also think,
Alan Weber,
you mentioned the McKinsey War for Talent study. You know, there is a huge value in knowing, just as the companies know what they're looking for, you know what you're looking for in a company, so you don't waste a lot of time interviewing at or interviewing companies that you will ultimately have no interest in. McKinsey said companies have to brand themselves to their potential employees just as they brand themselves to their potential customers. So you've got to read the brand of the company you might be interested in. They came up with four categories. The big blue chip company. If what really makes you happy is working at a company that is the best in class and you get your ticket punched, you get a good career boost, go interview with blue chip companies. The flip side of that are the hot young startups.
Exactly.
They don't have any brand value yet, but they can surpass the old blue chip, and you get to be there when it happens. The big risk, big reward. A third brand they identified was the kind of we're going to change the world company. Could be not even a company, could be a not-for-profit. And you discover that really what really gets you excited as a potential employee is a chance to do something that's memorable and really goes down in history. And the last one, which I think gets a lot of applause these days, is the sane company, the good lifestyle company, the company that says to its employees, everybody's overburdened, everybody's working too hard, we're a company where you can come and yes, you'll do great work, you'll be really proud of your work, but you'll also have a life if you work here. Those companies are recruiting people who are not willing to do the all-nighters and the cots in the corner. But read the brand of the company, and you'll know whether it's right for you.
Colleen, did you want to talk about Donnell's technique of interviewing companies?
How could you tell? I listened to Donnell, and it's very clear that candidates that have some varied background now are interesting to companies. But you have to be careful as a candidate because these companies want intelligence from the market. So you'll get lots of interviews these days, especially, and this is non-traditional, especially if you've been a job hopper and you've been at seven different companies in the last 7 years or 6 years. That's a value add when people interview you. Because it's so competitive, people are stealing directly from their competitors. So when you're out there, and a lot of my candidates are surprised too, wow, everybody will interview me. I'm just saying that, you know, look at where these companies are coming from. They want product launch and IPO. A lot of them are just going for that product launch and IPO. And to get the most intelligence out there, it's great for them because they may not have their org chart filled out. They may not know where they're going, and they just want to hear from candidates from the companies like the Amazons and the Microsofts, not necessarily having the intention to hire them.
Interesting.
It's a nasty world out there, but you know, I got 3 months to get this product launched, and then I got the IPO coming, and so I've got to fill out my ranks with something that looks good to the VCs. I do have a couple clients that are saying, I know you're burnt out from that, why don't you come here, you can go home in five. I mean, the VCs don't want to really hear that. So it depends on what round they're in of finance.
Right. It also depends on what the company is doing and what business they're in the first place.
Right.
Stand by for callers. 1-800-423-8255 makes the new job interview connection. Mary is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Mary. Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. I first wanted to offer a job interviewing technique to go with some of the others that were mentioned at the institution where I've been recently working. We had an interviewer who had nailed a window in his office shut, and his first question to his interviewee was always, "Gee, I'm hot. Could you go open that window?" And then he'd watch and see how they dealt with the window that didn't open.
At what point was the interviewee supposed to put his fist through it? Didn't hurt a bit, boss.
See, the nice thing is, once you hear these things, you can now go to the interview with a power drill or something and deal with it yourself.
You've got your tool.
That's right.
Indeed, and
bring in the hammer!
That's a famous Wall Street gimmick. You know, if you really want to see how people react when the market won't move, you nail the window shut.
Well, at least they won't jump out.
I was going to say, when the market crashes, you open it up and see who jumps.
Right. See who jumps.
Break the window and throw the boss out.
Well, I also had a question besides that, and that is that I noticed you're talking a lot. You're referring to today's interviewees as kids or the body-pierced ones or the job hoppers.
And how nice those earrings,
advice,
yeah.
for someone in a different situation. I'm 35, and I've prioritized being a parent for the last 10 years. I have been working half-time. But since I'm not being interviewed and expected to exude confidence right now, I'll admit I'm very intimidated when I hear all of this. I feel I'm a creative person. I'm talented. I have a lot to offer. I'm smart. But I don't want to relinquish my life. I have the priority of my kids. It's going to continue to be a priority in my life. But I would love to do something more creative than what I've been doing. So I would like to know, you know, what kind of advice do you give to the job candidate who's not the young person out of college who says, you know, they can sleep in the cot on the corner and give everything to the company?
It's a wonderful question. You want a sane company, and you want to get rich, and you want to be creative, too, and change the world. Alan Weber, solve this problem in 10 seconds.
No problem. First of all, I don't think it's just all about body piercings in young kids. And in fact, there is a kind of a meeting of the generations going on right now where for all of the dot-com-itis, there's a new interest or a renewed interest in some adult supervision as well, some gray hair or a little bit of experience to leaven the mix. So I don't think you have to be intimidated at all. I do think it would be useful for you to identify what you want to bring to the, how do you add value? Bring that into your own conversations. What would you do that would add value to a company? And set your terms and your conditions. Be very clear about what you will do, what you won't do, what your priorities are. In a hot job market, you're going to be a valuable commodity. I don't think you have a lot to worry about.
I'll tell you what I tell candidates like this, because we get them a lot, and most of them are my friends, my age, but at any rate, that you have to go to an application area that you're an expert in. If someone comes to me and they say, "Boy, I know sports inside and out, I'm a sportscaster, but now I got to start at the bottom rung in Amazon and do customer service," don't do that. Go into a company whose application is built around the sports world. There's a million of them out there. Use your application knowledge. Don't apologize for not having the high-tech run, internet, e-commerce spin yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Mary, good luck, and thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Jeff is on the line.
Hi, this is Jeff. I'm a QA engineer here in Cambridge, and I had a...
QA, translate.
Quality assurance.
Okay.
Or quality engineer, whatever. I had an interesting situation with Microsoft about 6 years ago when I was working at Lotus. There was a time when Microsoft was actively trying to recruit basically everybody in our department all at the same time. And we thought that that was a little bit unusual, and everybody was like whispering to each other. And I decided to take them up on the offer because I had friends in Seattle. And I felt a little bit upset about it, you know, morally, because I really didn't think I was going to change jobs and move to Seattle because I had a pregnant wife at the time. But I couldn't resist being flown somewhere because I'd never been flown anywhere by a company for a job interview. And they flew me out to Seattle for a Friday interview and put me up at a hotel for the whole weekend. And when I got there at 7:30 in the morning, they had a shuttle bus that took just people who were applying for jobs from building to building. And at the time, I think they had like 23 separate buildings, and I got interviewed by it must have been 10 people over the space of the day. And I now they've heard everybody talking, they threw everything at me that you've been talking about, and I didn't realize it. And this was 6 years ago, so I was like, it was very overwhelming. They asked me the brain teasers. They interrupted me. It was really a horrible experience. And if I had really wanted the job, I probably would have been very upset.
Sorry, I apologize for all of Seattle.
Well, no.
Did they make the offer? Did you take the job? I take it not.
No, actually, they didn't. They called me back many weeks
later.
Not
another wimp from Boston. I can't believe this. First of all, Jeff, you got to get over the guilt. I mean, business school students spend the second semester of their second year. Do they get flown all around the country to have long weekends on other companies' expense accounts? So don't worry about that part.
Well, the interesting thing is I never graduated from college. I just sort of worked my way up over the years through, and so I never had a degree. So but they one of them actually took me out to lunch, and I drove.
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking,
go.
Oh my God, they did that to me too.
Yeah, well, interrupt him again.
Let me go back to where Jeff started, which was Microsoft was trying to recruit our whole department. That's another point that we haven't made it yet, but it's a critical point, which is if you're in a company and you want great people, the reality today is great people already have great jobs. And if your definition of recruiting is we'll take out some want ads and hope that people who are unemployed are going to apply to our company, you've lost the game before
it
even started. So one thing that companies that are really serious about this do is say, our job is to figure out by name almost, who do we want, and then go after them. And oh, by the way, they happen to be working for somebody else right now. So Cisco, which is probably better at this than just about anyone, has a 12-person department called the sourcing department. They're not sourcing chips. They're not sourcing software. They're soft sourcing talent. And they go to all the conferences, and they surf the web, and they get all the technical papers. And they say, here is the dream team that we want working at Cisco. Oh, by the way, they happen to be working at HP today. They happen to be working at IBM. We're going to go out and get those people. We're not going to wait till a boss pisses them off and they decide, I don't want to work here anymore. We're going to go out and get those people. Second thing they know, and another critical point that's sort of who's doing the interviewing, is that most great people today don't really think so much about working for this abstraction called the company. I mean, it's sort of like rooting for a team. You're kind of rooting for the uniform today. Working for a company, you're working for the letterhead. It's all about who are the other people I'm going to be spending my 60 or 70 hours a week with? So the first thing Cisco does when you express an interest in having a job there is they ask you over email typically, do you want to make a friend at Cisco? And they've got a database of thousands of people who are willing to do this at Cisco, and they match you up with someone who maybe went to the same school as you, someone who's in the same area as you, someone who's the same age as you, and this person becomes your host. I'll help you visit Cisco. I'll take you, or not, you know, some HR drone doing it, because they understand that smart people are thinking about, who am I going to see on Monday morning when I come in? What am I going to learn from the people that are around me? And it's not just sort of what you're asking in the interviews, but who's doing your recruiting, who's doing your evaluating. You got to push that deeper into the company as well.
And, you know, Jeff's experience, I think, makes the point really clear that companies that are trying to win the talent war don't leave anything to chance. It is the old Inspector Clouseau, every move is carefully planned. You know, you go down to Dell to interview for a job, and Dell picks you up at the airport. You don't grab a cab. They pick you up at the airport with a chauffeur driven limousine, and they drive you to the Dell interview. Now, if you're Jeff, or
they miss the opportunity to see you drive,
but they control the route you take to the Dell headquarters. They don't want you to see parts of the city that are going to be less attractive to you as a potential candidate.
It's control.
They are managing your experience. And this is true for any smart company. This is not about high tech. This is not about certain cities in the United States. Companies that want to win the talent war have to really reverse engineer the process so they think about, who are the people going to talk to? What are they going to see? How do we encourage them to join us?
Hold the thought. 1-800-423-8255 makes the new job interview connection. David is on the line.
Hi, Chris. Gentlemen, love the publication.
Thank you.
I wanted to just share my recent experience and experience in two startup software companies. The company I work for is located in Natick, Mass., We're about 30 people, and our mandate is to grow to 80 this year. We need to hire 50 people. Mm-hmm. And so I am constantly meeting with new recruits. And while there are a lot of great candidates out there, I do find that this gold rush in the startup and the internet economy is really driving a lot of people out of the woodwork that wouldn't normally be looking to move. And as a result, we're not only seeing quite a few unqualified candidates, but a tremendous amount of arrogance as well. So not to say that we don't have a lot of great people and see a lot of great people, but one of the tests that we give is one of the most fundamental things, and that's near the before we're about to make a candidate an offer, and this could be a candidate with an Ivy League education and a very good work background. We sit them down and give them a scenario and ask them to write a letter to the customer or the prospect, explaining the dilemma and how they would resolve it. We weed more people out of that part of the throughout that part of the process than at any other time. We have a lot of otherwise qualified candidates who can't communicate. So
this is the good old writing test, basically.
It's just a good old writing test, and you know we don't need to nail boards to the windows to find out that some people can't communicate.
What do we care what they think after we've seen what they write? What they write.
We can tell a lot about what they think and how they interact and communicate and engage by the interview itself. And one of your guests mentioned coming in and really talking. You know, I've seen your website and I have some ideas. That's of course the most impressive thing. But I'm just speaking.
You know, your points are really good one, and it goes beyond just writing. We've in Fast Company, we've written about other companies that actually create simulations. They'll set up an office with an inbox and a telephone, and they'll send the potential employee into this fake office and say, okay, here's the inbox, go through it. The phone will ring. It'll be an irate customer. How do you deal with this when you're not prepared? And in effect, it is a simulation exercise designed to see how people respond, and if they're arrogant, if they're friendly, can they deal with the unexpected, can they deal with ambiguity, as Colleen was saying. These are all kinds of tests that you can give to people, and it really does surface a lot of the underlying capabilities.
It reminds me a little bit of the old the Red Auerbach Celtics test was, you know, with 5 seconds on the clock, is he going to want the ball?
Right.
Is he going to say, give me the ball, I'll take the shot? Basically, that's the test that everybody wants.
Well, Red had another test, too, which was, and it gets back to, I think, part of what David was saying, and that is what are the statistics that matter? If you are Bill Russell, it's not how many points you can score, it's how many blocks do you come up with. And so a team that knows the kinds of skills it needs is able to get the right metrics and build a team around those metrics.
Colleen Elwood, what's the last question here?
The last answer, maybe. You know, I'm interested in this communication thing. Email is so critical now, too. It's a great way to find, a little easier way to find out their communication skills, asking them questions on email, see how quickly they respond. One of the questions we ask after we've met them, actually, send them a barrage of questions about what would your references say about you in this area, this area, this area. And then, of course, we call the references and see. It's a good communication thing. The world is different now, I think, you know, as a wrap-up for my end, because I got to go. It's different, and it's frustrating, but it's a game. It's the most fun game that we've done yet in the last 10 years, I think.
If people treat it as a game in the good sense of that it's fun to do, you're always learning, it's always challenging, that's a good mindset to have. The last caller made a critical point, too, which is the gold rush mentality that's going on now. And we all know it. There is a gold rush mentality, which brings out good people and brings out lots of opportunities. It makes these questions more important than ever. Do the people you're interviewing share the value system of your company? Do they care about the same thing the people who are already working there care about? Likewise, if you're looking for a company and you've got a choice of seven, am I going to be working with a group of people who see the world the same way as I do? And in an era of sort of more choice than ever, it takes more work than ever to make the right choice.
Good luck with the job interview, everybody. Alan Weber, Bill Taylor, editors of Fast Company Magazine, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Colleen Elwood of Devon James Associates in Seattle. Thanks also for help today from Rebecca Smuckler and Kim Bichari. The Connection is produced by Catherine Bidwell, Hitesh Hatti, John Holt, Amy McDonald, and Keith Shields, all of whom survived the interview with our senior producer, Mary McGrath. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. By the listeners of WBUR Boston and by Hutchins, Wheeler and Dittmar, counselors at law, more than 150 years of dedication and service to its clients, and by Sunday River Ski Resort, featuring 8 interconnected mountains, 126 trails to explore, and an extensive snowmaking system, sundayriver.com.
BRI, Public Radio International.